The Psychedologist. Eva Milan Giga, aka Coyote, graces the psychedologist with her joyful presence. In this episode, meditation, embodiment, there is no consciousness without collective consciousness, connecting to the consciousness of nature, finding our pleasurable no, pause as permission to be slow, to enjoy subtlety, to cultivate gratitude, to trust in self, community, and experience. Forgiveness, breath as refuge, making space for self-inquiry, nervous system tending, and the rush of rushing, or maybe more accurately, accomplishment. Patience, deep witnessing, laughing at ourselves, cultivating laughter and joy as a ritual to begin and end each day, vowing never to abandon ourselves, and the Legacy Project. Eva Milan Giga, aka Coyote, is a writer, preschool teacher, artist, and mindfulness meditation facilitator, interested in finding awe in the mundane and emanating reminders of meeting ourselves where we are. She is a holistic health advocate and a jack of all trades, learning to embrace her fullness and multitudes with each breath, shifting nervousness to excitement and fear into fascination. Raised in Brooklyn, New York, Eva Milan has had the honor to offer tools and techniques of mindfulness through her guided meditations for the past 7 years in New York City, Mexico, and virtually far and wide. Hello, my dear friend, my tank-topped friend. We're tank-top twins today. Oh, welcome to the Psychedologist.
Ooh, I love it. I'm so, so grateful to be here. I am buzzing softly, gently. Thank you for having me.
Me too. I'm buzzing too. My hands and my feet are buzzing.
Ooh. And you know, honestly, it was cool because like working up to getting here with you, I experienced nervousness, you know? And actually, on that note, this is not even what I was going to say, but I reminded myself in saying that I was nervous that nervousness is the same thing as excitement, except with a different like perception, right? Yeah. It's the same energy. So really, I'm just so excited, you know? And then also in the nervousness when I was making it like not excitement, which no, that was never really happening, but how to tend to like nervousness or to shift it from nervousness to excitement. I was just like, this is deep and it's I almost want to say serious, but it's not, you know, it's light. It's beautiful. There's nothing to be nervous about, you know?
Well, I just welcome in all the parts of you feeling all the different things that they are. And yeah, I've heard that about nervous and excited. It's like kind of they're twins. And what I usually like to think of, like someone is nervous, say someone's going to take their first journey with psychedelics or something and they're nervous. Like something I like to say is like, that means you respect it. Like that this is important to you. You recognize it as a force and you know, you have the due humbleness to it.
Absolutely. Oh, I love that. And that's what it is. It's like, I just really appreciate you asking me to be a part of this and appreciate the work that you're doing. And I'm like, oh, like the honestly, oh my God, the little kid in me, young Eva Milan is like, oh my gosh, I matter. Someone wants to hear, even though I know that, like having those reminders, you know, with like-hearted people, it's like, oh, you just get tickled, you know? You're like, oh, so.
I do. Yes. Oh, you matter so much. And I'm doubly grateful for you to be here. I mean, the gratitude is just like exuding out of every pore. Yeah. And I love your work. I mean, you've really taken me to some deep places in meditation and guidance. Yeah, you're doing amazing, amazing thing.
Thank you so much. I so appreciate it. Wow.
So take us back, though. Yeah, you mentioned little Ava Milan, and I'm happy that she's here. So what was your relationship to consciousness as a little one?
Yeah, I love this question. I think that my relationship to consciousness as a little one really was sparked by like my awe and relationship with nature and animals. My sister is older than me, and when we were young, she was like a home vet. Like, she would find animals that were like somehow messed up. Like, I've had like 2 sparrows, a squirrel, a pigeon, okay? Because my sister would find these animals and want to take care of them. And I think like those first encounters with these beings that like, okay, this animal doesn't speak in a language that I understand. But it has like, the word wasn't consciousness to me when I was young, obviously, but I just had this awareness of like, I have awareness. I'm perceiving my experience, and so are other people, you know? So, I think my first like, consciousness like is a thing. It was activated when I tapped into collective consciousness. And I think that like there is no consciousness without collective consciousness, in my opinion and in my experience. I do believe that we can, you know, hone into our own internal, like there is internal consciousness and then there's like external consciousness. But I think that like in this experience, like consciousness is collective consciousness. And also, being young, I always had, and still now, an over concern or awareness of other people's emotions. So what we were talking about before, like me wanting to make sure everyone's good, that's been a thing since I was a little kid. People call it like, being an empath. When I was young, I didn't know that there was a term for it. And when I learned, it gave me a lot of relief because I really thought like I was crazy or something. Because I didn't have the tools. Like I would just feel this energy and then want to do something about it, when you don't always need to do something about other people's energy, right? There's that, like, and that's where the internal consciousness is important, you know, like having that balance of like, okay, like the outside world is becoming a little bit too much. Let me go within and integrate and process, you know? So yeah, I think like animals and nature just made me very aware that like, I'm not the only one with awareness in this experience. And there are so many different versions of awareness and perceiving reality, you know? And then what does that look like when it's all intermingled?
Yeah. I find myself really relating to your story about childhood and connecting to animals and their consciousness. And for me as well, it was connecting to plants when I was little. But then I went through like a time when it kind of dropped off, that connection was lost. And I was more like in the material realm of like other people, and especially like romantic interest was like a big, you know, obsession. And I lost that connection to the consciousness of nature, and then fortunately refound it. But did it stay with you? Like what happened next?
That's so like, yeah, I resonate with that. It did drop off for a bit, or it was always there. Okay. I actually feel like it was always there, but it shifted from a thing that was always something that I can access, or always something that I felt like I could access, to like time and place. And What I mean by that is, like, even as I was, you know, a preteen and a teenager, even though I totally agree with you, like, I became a little bit overly concerned with, like, fitting in and people pleasing and romance. Yeah, like, love, romance. But then every summer, like, I'd go to New Hampshire with my best friend Hayden. And, you know, like, we'd go in the woods. And so there was always, it's like, all right, I have my escape to the consciousness of nature. But it became a little bit removed. It was like something I had to go to instead of something that's always there, right, you know?
Right.
Or I forgot that it was always there. I forgot that it was something that, like, okay, you live in Brooklyn, but you could still go outside or look out your window at the tree and the birds. My mind got a little bit wrapped up in being concerned about other things for a little while. But I think that that was just what my mind thought. You know, I think the awe was still always there. It was just a little bit, like, blurred by other perception. And then I think I dove back. I really dove back into, like, shifting out of that people pleasing and tending to myself in my senior year of high school. That was the first time that I did, like, my own yoga practice. 'Cause I was always exposed to yoga growing up because my godfather did yoga and he would help me. He would have me help him, like, push him into deeper into a certain, you know, posture. But when I was in the senior year of high school, that was the first time, like, I took a yoga class. They had yoga and gym. And I think around, like, 15, 16, 17, I was having a really hard time in myself and in my experience. You know, I think that's
one does.
It's like, I was just like, oh, yeah, I'm you know.
And the universe is like, it's okay. It's okay. You're going to get through this. Like, just keep going.
Really? Prove it to me that it's going to be okay.
Oof.
It's like, just keep living. Just keep living. Like, you got this. But yeah, that first yoga class, something clicked. I took yoga and I used to be like a kid that, like, skip classes, like, you know, all this stuff. Like, I was just a little rebellious kid. And my friends who knew me to be that way, like, yoga was in gym class and gym was right before lunch. So a lot of times we'd skip gym and just have, like, a really long lunch. So my friends would be like, hey, like, meet us outside. I'm like, nope, yoga. Like, whoa. That was the first time that I was, like, solid within myself. And like, even with the, like, I don't really say no to my friends. Then they might get mad at me and think I'm not. No, but I didn't care. Like, that exposure to yoga at that time, when I was doing yoga, it was the first time that I was, like, out of my head and just, like, in my body and knowing that, like, you're okay here. Like, you don't need to think about it. You don't need to, like, figure anything out. You're breathing. You're moving your body with intention. This feels good. This is good. You're okay. Like, I got present to that. And since then, like, I've just continued to go on this journey of self-exploration through different modalities, through yoga, through meditation, through, you know, like, dabbling in shamanism, Buddhism. That's just where the journey branched off. Or so I think. You know,
I mean, that's amazing. It's definitely bringing back memories of when I started doing yoga, not in gym class. It was at my dance studio and it was in college. But I remember I would get home and my boyfriend would be like, oh, you smell like yoga, because I had the, like, lavender. Like, yeah, they were putting lavender oil on my third eye chakra. Like, you know, like, you smell like yoga.
Oh, wow.
But it is, it's nice to, like, oh, what were you going to say?
No, I was just saying that's beautiful.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's nice to like to choose self in that way. Like, can feel such a, it can feel so risky, I think, to say no to friends or partners or whatever. But like, reminds me of saying no to something is saying yes to something else, and just all that was saying yes to you.
I'm so grateful I said no to them. Oh my gosh.
Right.
And now no is like, you know, I get excited about finding my pleasurable no's. I was a people pleaser for a very long time. Like, I mean, and still in moments I am, but yeah, like at this point, having been able to access my pleasurable no, oh baby, I love it. I'm like, it feels so good. I'm so proud of myself. Yeah. I'm proud of my 17-year-old self for feeling that and honoring that feeling, right? Instead of just being like, oh, whatever. Like, no, I felt it and I followed that feeling.
What's the deal with the pleasurable no's? I need some of those. I have not heard of this.
Really?
Uh-huh. At recovering people pleaser here.
I'm like, where did I even get that term? Dang, you know, and in the journey of like doing a bunch of different work, you forget where you learn a lot of the magic that you learn. So I wish I could be like, this person taught me this and give them credit, but I really don't remember. But I do know that, like, right, like our minds are powerful and they do help us in a lot of ways. And then there's this thought of like, you can't believe every thought that you have, right? So I think that, and from going from years of being a people pleaser, in my mind, it's like the habitual people pleasing mind would try to make me wrong for having boundaries. So I had to, I think the pleasurable, that note, that adjective, is an invitation to like go into the body. Instead of making a decision from your thoughts or your mind, like either tap into the heart or for me, like my sacral chakra. And that's the chakra associated to pleasure. Like really getting into like your womb, your belly, your heart, and asking yourself that question, right? Or you know, someone asks you, oh, can you do this or that? You ask that to yourself and let your sense into what your body is telling you instead of what your narrative, right? Because the brain is often habitual. So the brain's going to be like, oh, that's mean. Oh, they're not going to. Okay, well, I'm always going to do what people want if you're telling me I'm a bad person for not.
Right.
So what else can I tap into to get this answer? And then working and then like, rewiring the brain, like doing that enough so that when someone does ask you a question, over time your brain doesn't jump to being a bully.
Uh-huh.
You know, or when it is a bully, you can start discerning like, all right, what's my true voice and what's my like habitual maybe ego voice, you know?
Totally
yeah
I think I had an experience like that recently where some part of me wanted something really, really badly and was just fixated on anything, any way to make that happen. And then when I learned that that wasn't going to be able to happen, I noticed after I was like, you know, shocked and sad for a couple minutes, there was this strange feeling of pleasure and release. And I was like, what? Okay. Some parts of me are actually relieved that this isn't happening. All I could feel was this other part that was like obsessed and longing for something. And then when that was not an option, I was able to tune into like underneath that there was this other, yeah, this pleasure of getting off the hook. You know, some parts of me didn't want to do it. So I think of that in the pleasurable no, like, oh, in particular, that saying no somewhere in my body, like even as parts, even as like my, right, you said ego, my ego might say you're unfair or like that's unkind or like, well, you could do it. Like, you know, you could do it. And yet like the body is saying, oh, please don't do it. And that's a gift to give to the self.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, you touched on that pause, right? It's like you answered it and then you sat with yourself and then the pleasure came. I think another problem is that people rush to give an answer because we're in this time of like phones where it's like everyone knows you always have your phone on you. You see a text, you should answer right now. So it's like when people ask you a question, you feel like you have to answer it right now. And no, you can actually just say, I don't have an answer for you right now. Give me a bit of time.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Let me get back to you. And then if that's not an option, well, then I'm not going to rush to say yes to you. I guess the answer is no.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We need like a people pleaser flow chart. Like, you know, if yes, go to...
Ooh, I think I might need to create a little toolkit for people pleasers because one, like, I feel like there's a lot of people pleasers out there. And I feel like people pleasers don't realize that there's a lot of people pleasers out there, maybe. And there's a lot of shame around people pleasing, but then there's also shame around like letting go of people being a people pleaser. So
yeah.
Yeah, I think we all could use support around that for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Count me into the toolkit. I want one. And
that's going to be a free resource on my website. That's how I see it. Like,
There we go.
You know, we need this.
And I think like having compassion for where the people pleasing coping strategy comes from, because it's a coping and a survival strategy, yeah, as I see it, or like how it's functioned for me, was definitely to relieve tension of
absolutely
me being a being that has needs or that takes up space. Right.
Mm.
Or like Sonia Renee Taylor's book, The Body is Not an Apology.
Ooh.
Yeah. Have you ever heard that
before? No. Ooh, I love books, so.
Yeah, it's a deep, deep work, but it's small, but deep.
I'm excited.
I'll put a link in the show notes so people can check it out.
Perfect. Ooh.
But let's go back to, let's go back to pause. I want to hear you talk about pause.
Pause. Yeah. Okay. See, look, I'm pausing right now.
I was just thinking.
Pause is permission, right? It's like there's so much within pause. And slowness. Pause is slowness. Pause is the permission to be slow. Pause is trust,
yeah,
right? Mm-hmm. Trust in self and in community and in experience. Pause allows us to tap into subtlety. Subtlety has really saved my life. And I'm so grateful because my mom taught me to be a person, just by her being this way, has taught me to be a person that like has awe for like the subtleties of life and like what some people might see as mundane. Like I get, there could be certain times where you take a walk with me and we're walking together and then you look to your side and I'm gone because I'm way behind you because I'm taking like a video of like a leaf creating a shadow on the floor. And I just think it's so amazing, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that pause holds space for the magic that is always here to be witnessed, sure, you know? Because when you don't have pause, you're in a rush. And in a rush can mean different things. Like in a rush doesn't always mean moving fast. I think it's just like not taking the time to slowly observe what's happening around you. Pause holds the possibility for gratitude to be cultivated, you know? And there's relief and yeah, there's relief in pause. There's release in pause, and I think that we can access forgiveness a lot easier in that space of pause. And forgiveness is also vital. Like, that's definitely a, that's how I move, honestly, throughout every day. Like, that's one of the intentions, to just move with forgiveness. Because it's easy to, or it can be easy to just cast judgment on things all the time. Like, you wake up and, I mean, not every day, but there's some days where you wake up and you're just like, it's like, wait, God, breathe, pause his breath, you know, and the breath is always there. That's what I love to share with folks. Like, breath is refuge, and your breath is there all the time. It's there all the time, and you can take an even one intentional breath makes such a difference.
Yeah.
And going back to, like, something we were talking about before, like with the people pleasing, within pause, I feel like one must invite in gentleness. And then the questions can come up of like, well, what do I really want? Why do I want that? What's behind this, right? Like, so with the people pleasing, instead of judging ourselves or making ourselves wrong for that, like honoring how it helped us tend to our nervous system. And then also asking, like, well, why is that my habit? Like, what am I trying to tend to or protect? And then how can I do that in a more genuine way, you know? So pause provides space for self-inquiry. And then just really finding out, like, just really meeting ourselves where we are. You know?
I love that, like, rushing can look many ways. It's not always just like fast motion. Like, I'm thinking, like, being super fixated on something is like kind of like a rush. Like, mm-hmm. It's not, you know, like, no one's doing that. I mean, maybe like a predator hunting prey, like fixate a little bit, but just until, you know,
right.
Until, yeah.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, rushing is like it's like unhealthy tunnel vision. I don't know. It's like you're focusing on something, and you're overly focusing on something, and you're missing everything else.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes that can be good, I suppose. You know, yeah. Having focus is important. But yeah, I think we're tricky. We're very smart. So our minds, that's why I like to find like how we discover, you know, like roughing isn't always fast, right? Because our minds are able to like trick us and tell us like, oh no, you're not doing that. It's okay. It's like, okay, what is this serving me? You know? And how can I tend to myself more?
Okay.
Uh-huh. You know? Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now I'm like curious as to, and I'm huge, like I don't even like to use the word hate. I highly dislike rushing. I don't like being rushed. And I don't like rushing myself.
Right.
And I don't remember where I was. Maybe I just wanted to express that.
Do not rush her, folks. Are you listening?
Rush me. but then, okay. Then, like, sometimes we almost, like, force ourselves into needing to rush by not being real and accountable for what is needed in certain moments, right? There's been so many times where I've, like, waited to the last minute with something, and then I've like made it so that there's no other choice but for me to rush now. And then I like make myself uncomfortable, and I'm stressed out because I feel like I don't have time. So, you know, it's like pause, accountability, honesty, and knowing that like you can tap into support so that you don't have to rush, you know?
Yeah. No, this is like really interesting because I kind of get a rush off of rushing sometimes. Like I get a little bit of a high, like leaving right at the last minute that I possibly could to get there right on time, as long as there's no traffic. And then, well, there might be traffic, so I'll go a little over the speed limit. And yeah, but it's like I get this feeling of power almost when I'm like doing a bunch, like multitasking.
I feel you.
What's up with that?
That's so interesting. Okay. What I'm hearing is, because I, even though I don't like rushing, I am like I am such a person that like, you know how when you're taking an international flight, it's like, be there 2 hours before.
Hell no.
I'm gonna waste my day and be sitting at the airport. I already know that it's not gonna take that long. And sometimes it does. And then you're like, okay. Okay, I have a few things here. Let's see. That rush, it's interesting. So like there's rushing and then there's a rush that you get, right? So it's like different uses of the word. And I agree. There's times where I'm like at the last minute, but then it feels so good when you're just like, look at that. I'm so aligned because yes, I was in the last minute, but everything, the light is turning green and the walk sign and ooh, I just perfectly made that train. And you feel like this magical being. You're like, and you feel like you trusted yourself. And I think a big part of it too is you feel a sense of accomplishment. And then there's that risk. There's that like combination of accomplishment mixed with risk that just feels so good. And there's also that feeling of like when there's people that are like, I'm not sure if you're going to make it. And then you make it and you're like, hi.
See that? Yeah.
I don't know. It's just, it is. It is what it is. But that feeling can, I really think that it can come up even when you just get things done, even when it's not at the last minute. And now yeah. I'm curious about exploring the difference. Like, is there a rush when I just do things in good timing and get it done? There's this sense of accomplishment. Is it a rush? Now I'm curious. Like, I want to investigate that for myself. But I also think that a part of the way that I really work on like being a friend to myself when I do have to rush, when I am in a situation of rush, is just having trust. Like, okay, I'm rushing and I could be stressed out, but me being stressed out isn't going to change anything. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I'm on the train and I'm late to work. Me being stressed and aggravated about it isn't going to have the train go any faster. So now I have to tap into having trust for that everything's going to work out, that whatever does happen because of me being late, I'll be able to work with it, to make another choice that has everything be okay, you know? So it's like we can't completely avoid the things that we don't like. So yeah, I try to do what I can so I don't have to rush. And when I do rush, it doesn't feel as bad because I tap into just deepening trust, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And then inviting in forgiveness, you know?
Yeah, the forgiveness piece. I'm glad you came back around to that. What do you want to say about forgiveness? Let me share one thing first. Yeah. I think in the past, I was, air quotes, forgiving people and maybe forgiving myself, I thought. But then the same ruptures, the same kind of like harms would happen again. And so it's like, I feel like what I thought was forgiveness, I was actually kind of like trying to forget and like not not integrate the harm and the past. So, because recently I did some deep work to forgive someone, and I fully felt the forgiveness, and it was like taking a cool shower in nature. Like, it was just so life-giving and vital. It felt incredible. I forgave them, and then the situation kind of could come back around where I could like get into it and put myself in that vulnerable place again. And I chose to, oh, I had a pleasurable no, actually. I did a pleasurable no. Yeah.
You see?
And right? And it feels like it was like because of the forgiveness in a way, like forgiving this person and like healing in myself, then the boundary that was needed, you know, that I learned that that boundary was needed with this person. It was just kind of easy. It was like a no-brainer. Mm. So that's my like recent forgiveness win, I guess. Mm. But curious what you think of the topic.
That's amazing. Yeah. And I think you spoke really well to like, I think it's situational, right? So sometimes you forgive the person and you let them know that you forgive them. Sometimes you forgive people just within yourself.
Yep. Yep. This was
And sometimes it's like a forgiveness plus, like plus add a tool now. It's like forgiveness plus the new boundary. Forgiveness plus let me let you know, like, yeah. Forgiveness plus the new boundary, right? Like, I think that, and part of me wants to say, I think that, like, forgiveness can't be on its own, but sometimes it is, right? It depends on what you want from the relationship going forward. Because, like, you can forgive and still let go of a relationship. That doesn't mean you didn't forgive it. Or you can forgive and still have that pause. Like, I have a friend who sent me a message in January, who I had a falling out with last January. She sent me a very long message, kind of like just, you know, processing and reflecting on like our falling out and things she realized and stuff like that. And I read the message in part. I haven't responded. I probably will at some point, but it's like forgiveness doesn't mean now we're friends again. Or forgiveness doesn't mean now everything just goes back to how it was. It's like forgiveness, what forgiveness always does need is like integration and a moment to process, you know, yeah. Like forgiveness. And now what tending tool do we like attach onto that forgiveness, either for ourselves, for the relationship, for that person? I think it's a forgiveness and knowing that like you can always dive back into that forgiveness, right? There could be layers. Thank you. Layers of, oh, wait, now I'm going to be, there could be layers of it, right? Like, and sometimes you just go, keep going deeper and deeper, mm-hmm. especially with a certain person. And grace. And patience, I think, are also good companions with forgiveness and pause.
Yeah. The trifecta.
But like forgiveness every day, every day.
And laughing at ourselves.
Oh, yes. I love that. I love that. Oh.
That's
it's nice. It is. It is. And it was kind of like, I don't think I could laugh at myself until I was ready in a way. Like I used to, you know, if something exploded in the kitchen and went everywhere, like I would curse. I would just like, it would ruin my day. It just felt like, you know, the universe was laughing at me. And now I feel like I'm laughing with the universe when that happens. Like I literally was squeezing some bright red colored sauce out of a packet last week. And the packet just like busted out the other side and just sprayed like red everywhere. And it was so hilarious. I'm so glad I could laugh about it. But I couldn't until I was ready, like until there was a certain level of peace in myself. I guess I couldn't. Maybe people could try to laugh at themselves and get there faster. But I just, you know, you're ready when you're ready.
Yeah. And you can be ready and then in the next day not be. And that's okay. You know, and that's something like healing. Is not linear. Grief is not linear. Like, you know, and we can't beat ourselves up for like thinking that it's like this climb. No, it's wavy, baby. And that's okay. Like, you know, that's okay. Bask in the fact that yesterday you could laugh at that and today you're not. Well, that's how you, like, meet yourself where you are and do what you need to do to love on yourself. Okay, you're angry about it. That's okay. It's okay, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, love the angry part.
It's all important. And, like, I mean, we are these fascinating beings. We're whole universes within ourselves. So for me to think that, like, I learned how to laugh at myself and then the next day with all of these things happening consciously and subconsciously that I'm, no, like, maybe something happened in my dream or in my subconscious that I don't even realize I'm processing. That's why I'm angry. So I think having grace and forgiveness and just deep witnessing, you know, like, okay, I'm angry. Let me be with that. Let me ask it questions. What does it need from me? Yeah. I think it's like when we make ourselves wrong, that's like just a lot of inner turmoil happens. It's like, how can we move forward if we're always wrong? Mm-hmm. There's always a problem. Oh, I shouldn't have done this. Oh, I could have done this better. Okay, yeah. Well, of course, you can always say that, or you can be with yourself.
Yeah. Oh, so, yeah. Oh. So feeling this.
Man. I just want to, like, skip everywhere in the world and, like, broadcast these words. Like, you're okay. It's okay. You can forgive yourself.
The listeners can't see the magical dance moves that you're doing right now.
My skip arm?
Yeah. Big skip arms. Big skip arm energy.
So a motto that... So one of my mottos is no force, just flow. But only if any force, just the force of our soul, right? Oh, it's a little poem. Great. So no force, just flow. And now I've also cultivated another motto since my time in Mexico, and it is poco poco, which means little by little, little by little. Oh my gosh, little by little, please take your time. Like, and even, okay, you think you're taking your time and it feels like too much, take even more time.
Yeah,
do it even smaller.
Yep.
Eat that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mas poquito. I knew this wonderful, wonderful, very Buddhist. He was not like a Buddhist, but he was, you know, he had those qualities of a Buddha, this coconut farmer in Costa Rica. And he would always say, coco a coco.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm gonna find him.
Yes, I know. I'll bring you there.
Oh my gosh. For real. Oh my gosh.
I would love to be in Central America with you sometime. I would love to go to Mexico with you.
Oh my God. Please. So I'm doing, the plan is to do that long trip every winter. Like, I'm not doing winters in New York anymore. Sorry, guys.
Good for you.
Sorry, if you wanted me here in New York City in the winter, nope.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. So, yeah, come see me.
All right. It's going to happen. So, in our remaining moments or couple moments, I wonder if you'd like to share a consciousness hack that you have, a favorite way of getting in touch with your awareness. And also if there's just anything else you want to share, like, I'm all ears.
Consciousness hack I have, and then I would love to just briefly talk about my meditation offerings and a very exciting project I'm working on, which has to do with like wellness and social justice, which I know you touched on, which I love that you touched on because it's so important. Like, I'm so over this like trendy wellness that's only accessible to like rich people. Like, fuck that. That's so not it. Like, the people who need it most can't get access to it. That's crazy. All right. Mm-hmm. So anyway, but consciousness hack. More laughter. A lot of the things that I said, honestly, but as like a hack, I would say something I thought about was seeing if we can create, you know, as individuals, inviting in, like, cultivating laughter and joy as a ritual within the start of our day and the end of our day. Like, creating that, like, little container of self-tending. More laughter, more play. Right. There's a lot of things that are so important. Even this conversation feels so very important. And I think that it's important that we aren't too serious. You know, like, I feel like sometimes, like, things that are important feel like you have to be like straight faced and serious. No, like there can be play in even the most, you know, important and quote unquote serious things. So inviting in more play, forgiveness, having the courage and going into like the discomfort of inviting in pause, inviting in more pause and more slowness. And also on the note of like creating ritual for self, just exploring like throughout our lives, trying different things and exploring different ways to create ritual that will help us tend to our nervous system.
Love that.
And using the breath as refuge, right? So like I'm a big meditation advocate. I think that like in my work, one of my intentions is to like let people know that meditation is for everyone. Even the folks that are like, I don't like it. I'm not good at meditating. It's like, okay, well, maybe you tried one specific type of meditation. Yeah. For me, meditation is like intentional breathing and slowing self down and allowing ourselves to deeply witness within, right? And that can be done in a formal seated meditation, sure. And if that's not for you, you don't have to scrap meditation or intentional breathing altogether, right? Like there's walking meditation, there's meditating while you're doing the dishes, shower meditation, like find what works for you. And really, I think the goal is just to create a deeper communion and bring ourselves closer to that breath, which will help us access our flow, which will help remind us that like we are these ever-changing beings. Nothing is permanent. Just like the breath is rising and falling and passing, so too is everything. So yeah, I think one of my consciousness hacks is like finding what works for you to get closer to that breath and closer to that slowness of self. Yeah, finding what works for you and not giving up on yourself. A motto that I have for my meditation offerings is vowing to never abandon ourselves. Right? And that, like, I can say that, it makes me want to cry immediately. Because the amount of times, and we do it in subtle ways too, but there's so often that we, like, try to convince ourselves to just abandon ourselves or try to convince ourselves that we're not good enough or almost, but not quite. Or, that was good, but you kind of suck. Or just like this mean, I think that we all have it, like this mean narrative within our minds. And after doing work, it quiets a bit, but it could still come up. And yeah, so vowing to never abandon ourselves and finding ritual that helps us to continue being committed to that vow.
I mean, I think that right there was like the consciousness hack toolbox.
You know? Yeah. And I really appreciate that question. And I want to know other people's consciousness hacks. No?
Well, it's at the end of every episode of The Psychedologist.
Ah, well, I'm going to go on a journey and listen to all of them. And yeah, I think it's so important. And yeah, meeting ourselves where we are, like, you can get advice from someone else, but you are you, you know, like, you know what you need, meaning everyone listening, you know? Yeah. So again, like someone could give you advice and you try it and it doesn't work for you. Don't judge yourself about it. Tweak it, make it your own, you know?
Right.
Movement is also a intentional movement, like getting into the body and loving on our bodies, our sacred vessels. Those are my hacks. Those are some of my hacks. And they'll keep expanding as I traverse this life in this body. But yeah, before the last few things I want to say.
Please tell me about your offerings. I'm so intrigued.
So one thing I do, which is, you know, just an amazing thing I'm so grateful to be able to do is I'm a preschool teacher at a community center in Harlem. So grateful. I love little beings. They are just, oh my gosh, little angels. They're just so pure and real. And I'm so grateful for that work. It keeps me honest. It keeps me honest. It keeps me frank. And I love to just stay within my childlike nature and learn from them as well. And then I also, which is where you and I met, I have virtual meditation offerings, like weekly or bi-weekly, so that anyone anywhere can tap in if they have a device. So I guess that's the thing. And then I also do in-person offerings frequently in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn, in partnership with Tumbleweed, my mom's shop and community space.
I cannot believe it. I did not know Tumbleweed was your mom's space. Oh my gosh.
And I help, I'm her helper. I'm her partner helper. So yeah, it's beautiful. That's where I started doing my meditation offerings at Tumbleweed. And I love Tumbleweed. It's so lovely. I love the community we've cultivated there. And I'm excited for more people to join. And really, so I do the meditation offerings in person, mostly in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn, but like wherever I go. So I had the honor of holding some in-person offerings in Mexico while I was there. And that's my goal and my hope is that everywhere I go, I can just offer meditation. And I can be an advocate for mindfulness and remind people that like this self-work and wellness is for everyone. It's really for everyone. And that's why I'm so excited. I'm just going to speak about it briefly. I'm sure there'll be opportunities to learn more about it through like my website or just contacting me. But me and a friend of mine are starting a nonprofit organization.
Big girl.
Okay, we're starting a nonprofit where we work to provide underserved communities with access to mental health tools and travel. So through travel wellness retreats. And we're going to have different cohorts so that we can hone in and focus on different communities. And our first community will be previously incarcerated young people. So that wellness, mental health, self-care, we can work to make it less exclusive and more accessible, right? Like travel wellness retreats are great, right? But they're thousands of dollars. And who has that? A lot of people don't, right? And so why should the people who can afford it only get access to this vital work and these vital tools? And on top of that, not just having it be like this, oh, you go on the travel wellness retreat and now you're back home and F you. No, to continue providing support for these people after they go back home to their own communities. So also creating an expanded vision of community and expanded sense of self. And yeah, I'm really, really, really excited about this. This is really, really important to me. My dad is not here because of the system of incarceration. And he's one of my biggest cheerleaders. Before he passed away, he moved to Brooklyn in an effort to calm down and meditate with me. So, it's like I do this for him, I do it for myself, I do it for everyone, but like he is a big part of why when I have moments of self-doubt, I breathe through it and keep going. All right, breathe through it. I share it with my partner. You know, you got to like let it go. You got to let it out. Like that's part of like breathing through it. Like, hey, by the way, I'm having self-doubt. I'm feeling imposter syndrome. Okay, well, guess what? You are important. Like your impact here matters. You know, she reminds me that like I wouldn't be partners with her. She wouldn't have chosen me to do this work with her if I wasn't capable. And I'm so excited to get this work out, get this beautiful love offering out. It's called the Legacy Project. So, we're in the very like beginning stages of creating, turning it into a nonprofit. So, you know, as more information comes out and as I have more things to share about it, I'll definitely share that with you. And yeah.
Thank you so much, Ava Milan. Seriously. I so appreciate it. I'll put links for all these things in the show notes for anyone who's listening to go check it out. Support this work. So important. I mean, how can we have a world without prisons if we're not taking care of the people that have been harmed by that violence? Right. There's so many points, so many ways that we need to address this. And I feel like, yeah, you're at a really important part of them.
Thank you.
And I see you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It feels so good to be seen. And I see you too. And I so appreciate you. So appreciate you. Wow. Wow. I'm basking. I'm like, I don't want to go. Yeah. This is important. So thank you for like creating this from your heart and doing what you needed to do to turn an idea into like a living, breathing thing in the world, right? Like that can be difficult, and you've done it and you're continuing to do it. And it's just so beautiful to hear different stories and different inspirations, you know.
Mm-hmm. With much grace. Yeah. Much grace.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so grateful. I feel so
I'm grateful for you. I'm going to think of you every time I pause and be like, oh.
Every time I say a pleasurable no, I'm going to think of you.
Oh, well, thank you so much, darling.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Ooh. I'm giving energetic hugs.
Hugs across the state lines.
And
much love.
Yeah. Thank you for all that you are.
Likewise. Until next time.
Okay, love. Talk soon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bye. Okay.
Bye.
The Psychedologist is Consciousness Positive Radio. Find us everywhere podcasts are hosted. For more information, visit us on Facebook or online at thepsychedologist.com.